Today's daf in Masechet Parah, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Irak Hodesh, is Perek Yud Beis, Mishnah Hey. Ochezu HaTahor, we're getting back now to the issues of Tumah V'Taira. Ochezu HaTahor B'Kurdom HaTameh B'Chnafo. So now the question is like this. This person who wants to get his hatchet, he wants to get it Tahor, and it's tummy now, and he doesn't want to become tummy himself. He wants to get hazoya on it. So what can he do in order to avoid being in a situation where he would become tummy by bringing the very kli that he wants to get tar by holding it? Well, what he can do is he can carry it without making himself tummy. Because as long as he puts his baguette around it, if it is even an avatuma, and it would be metami, the beged is not going to be chozer and tummy him. So because of that, he can hold his kardom, and somebody is maza on it, and then there wouldn't be a problem of his having become tummy. And now the problem is, but isn't he going to end up becoming tummy from the very fact that he's got mayim that's on the kardom and the mechatas is metame? So wouldn't he become tame even for carrying it? Because that would have been the din of the mechatas. No, because that was already nasa mitzvasai, right? So afa pishi yesha love kidei hazaya, and the shear that is metame a person who carries it is kidei hazaya. So by definition, there's enough water on that hatchet in order for it to be kidei hazoya, unless it fell off, but like this, he should become tummy anyway. So how's he going to protect himself? He protects himself by making sure that the mitzvah was done before he does the masa. So up until now, it's only been tummy meis. And at this point, it's not tummy at all. And the mayim is no longer kosher for hazoya. Kama yehei b'mayim. Now this is the way that the Mishnah introduces the real issue. The real issue is that the shiur that is necessary in order to be metame b'masa of the mechatas, which we learn out of the psukim from the way that the Torah speaks, and they say it's mehanida, that means, the mazet mehanida really means the noseit mehanida kishiur da'azoya. In which case, kama yehei b'mayim v'yeh b'hem kidei hazaya. So what is meant by the amount necessary? It means kideshi atpil roshe givolin v'yazeh. Has to be enough mayim that after I dip in the azov, I should still have water that wasn't absorbed into the azov, and now there's enough for me to actually sprinkle it. It's not that we're looking at the amount of water theoretically. We're looking for the amount of water practically that could end up being useful for hazoya. That's the sheet of the Tanna Kamma. So if even the Rosh HaGivolim, which we saw before, are dipped into the water, that's sufficient. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, this is a theoretical shear. It's not a practical shear. We're talking about the water that would be necessary, assuming that there was zero absorption. Let's imagine an azov that's made out of copper, okay? Fine, a magic copper azov. That's what it means, kidei hazoya. It doesn't mean that there's practically enough to actually be absorbed plus to do the hazoya. Okay, we don't paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, but you understand where he's coming from. Question is how to look at that, those shiurim, in which the Torah says it in such a funny way that hamazeh, the pasha says, okay, so hamazeh would mean the actual mazeh, so you would need the shiur that is necessary for the actual hazoya, which is what the chachamim hold. But doesn't really mean that a mazeh is tummy. Fine. Mishnah Vav. Hamazeh be'ezov tameh. Now, how about if this is an ezov that is roi l'kabel tumah, and we said before that a stam ezov is actually used for achila, and it's a spice, and therefore it should be roi l'kabel tumah if it's exposed to any of the shiva mashkin. So somebody uses an azov that is tamei. The question, what does is tamei mean? So once it is shayach to be mekabel tumah, then lechora it would automatically, if it wasn't watched specifically for the paraduma, it would automatically be metame because it wasn't tor lechatas. There's one additional point, however. How much is there in the Azov? Because in order for something to be metame something else, it has to be a shear of a kibetza. And remember, this is a big machlokas, Rashi and Tosis all over, whether that's just the shear of kibetza is in order for an eichlin to be metame something else, or if it's pelchas me kibetza, it's not even a kabel tuma. Okay, but in either event here, again, this machlokas goes through also the Mefarshei HaMishnah, but im yesh bo kibetza, so now it can be mitame acherim be kibetza for, and possibly even be mitame only itself it has a kibetza, like the Rav learns over, the Bartanur learns over here. So then, if you dip the Azov into the Mepar, the Mayim become basa for Hazah, because they were mekabel tuma from an Azov, that is tame. The Hazayatao is psula, because it's no longer kosher for Hazoya, which is fascinating because it doesn't say Hamayim Tmeim. So the Rambam explains that it's not talking about that the Azov was Tame at all. It's just talking about that the Azov was Shayach to being Metame. Once it's Shayach to being Metame, so then if it wasn't Shomur, so it already automatically becomes tamei for chatas. But that's why we don't want to say amayim tameim, because the psul over here is because of the mahalot of the chatas. But what about if it doesn't have any shaykhas to being matame, ein bo kibetza? So in such a case, the mayim would remain ksherim lahazor. But, nonetheless, if you did hazoya with this ezov, the hazoya would be pasul. Because there's two different issues over here. That's what the Mishnah wants us to understand. On the one hand, there's the impact of the Azov on the Mayim, and thus on the Kashrus of the Mayim. But on the other hand, there's a halacha that the Azov itself, just like it says, V'izah HaTahor. Well, there's two elements to the Izah HaTahor. There's the human being who's holding on to the Azov, and then there's the Azov itself that accomplishes the Hazoya. And if the Hazoya itself has to be from a Tahor, then it has to be from a Tahor person and a Tahor Azov. So even though the Mayim isn't possible because there wasn't a Shir of a Kibetza to possible the Mayim, the Hazoya would be Psula. So in order to use this water that was exposed to this Azov, you would need to have another Azov that was Shomor for Chatas from the beginning and therefore would be kosher for Hazoya itself. That's the Chiddush. Hazoya to Psula. Now, what's amazing over here is that if, in fact, the Azov is Tomei with a shear of kibitza, and it touches another Azov, that Azov is also possible. And that Azov can be Metame another Azov. Afilo ein mea. Why is this? And this is another very important Gavi Yisod. And that is ein monin lepora Rishon, Sheni, Rishlish. There's no din of attenuation of Tuma whatsoever when it comes to the Mepar. In which case, whoa, that would mean that normally we say, okay, there's a limit to maybe you could do one step further, you know, once it becomes a Shlishi Lituma, no, the din is Ein Monin Lechatat, is the technical lotion, Ein Monin Lechatat, Rishon, Sheni, Rishlishi. And therefore, whatever was shayach to being metame in the beginning, it's just metame. There's no question. Well, what is it? Is it a rishon l'tumah? It's tame. And anything that touches it is tame. And we're going to illustrate this halacha now in the coming Mishnayot as well. Because we have another mala, which we discussed earlier. Mishnah Zayin. Mishnah Vav. Mishnah Vav. Let's say that somebody actually did. No, that's what we did. Sorry. Mishnah Zayin. HaTahor lecha tashnit mu yadav. Another one of the klohen that we had before about the malois of Parah is that HaTahor lecha tat shnit mu yadav nitma gufo. So even though we have that special halacha legabe truma, were over there. We made those gezeiras that you can be metame yor yadayim by touching a sefer Torah. You can be metame yor yadayim. Okay, but that's only, obviously, if it's the yadayim that are tame. All it means is you need netilas yadayim. Or if you touch somebody who was a rishon letuma, you need netilas yadayim. But certainly are not metame the body through a negia. It's only a din in yadayim. But when it comes to the chatas, the paras chatas, as we saw before, nitma yado, nitma gufo, one of the malas of para. And therefore, if your hands require tefillah, then your entire body requires tefillah. And it's not going to help to do an netilas yadayim. And if that happens, then nitma gufo would be metame es chavero, because there's no rishon, sheni, shlishi, there's just tuma. And this tuma can affect anything, and it's not attenuated. In which case, you're metame the next guy that touches you, and that guy is metame the next guy that touches him. And this is afilu hein tmeim, this halacha that all of them become tame for the chatas, because ein meinim l'chatas rishon, sheni, v'shlishi. Whoa. Shee. These chumras are really coming together over here for the para. Mishnah Chet. Lagin shel chatat shenitmu acharav. Remember that we have a din that in the event that you have mashkim tmeim, which can never be metame a kli, because mashkim can't be a rishon letuma. It can't be an avatuma. And a kli is only mekabel tuma from an avatuma. Nonetheless, Rabbanan made a takona, and remember, this was based on the concept of the mashkin shel zav. Now, this mishnah is a little bit misleading, because that din, that mashkin tameyin, are mitame a kli me'achorav. Okay, that was one of the chumras that was a maila b'kodesh. It was not a maila b'chatas. Halachas kama v'kama, it's a maila b'chatas, that's for sure. But the din that because a zav is able with his mashkim, so if he spits, he urinates, that is going to be able to be metame a kli because it's ma'ayanot hazav. Ma'ayanot hazav are avatuma. And they're able to be metame kelim. So since there are liquids that are metame kelim, so we have the chumra of a maila b'kodesh, that if mayim, or any of the mashkim that are mekabel tuma, even though they're just regular old mayim, or tal, or shemen, or chalav, or dam, or dvash dvorim, and so on, doesn't make any difference. They will be metame, but we want to make sure that you don't make any mistakes. And that is, if you think that the kli is really tame, so then you're going to end up burning truma because of it. And we wanted to make it very clear when something is tame only as a maila drabanan, and when something is really tame. So in order to distinguish between real tuma and tuma that's coming your way only because of ma'alot, we created a very strange halacha, which is... strangely enough, I mean, this we talked about a chagiga, but it's based on the idea that it's possible to separate out the outside of a kli from an inside of a kli, right? Now, it's true that that's only said, legabi kli cheres, and it's said in the opposite direction, that it can only be a kabel tumor from the inside, not from the outside. But what we did to make it very obvious that this is an anomaly, a very serious anomaly, is that mayim tmeim make a kli tummy only from the outside. Now, the inside of the kli doesn't become tummy. Now, that's what we're talking about over here. When it comes to the din of the parashatas, so then the login shachatas, where they're nitmu achorav through mayim tmeim, when it comes to the chatas, the din is that even teichei is going to become tame. This part is true even by Kadesh, by the way. But the reason we're putting it here is because it fits the flow of the Ein Meinim L'chatas Rishon Sheni V'Shlishi. So the reason we said this first part is to justify our ability to continue, because from this point on, it's not true what we just said. It would not be true about Kadesh. And the din over there would be, when it comes to the chatas, is that it's metame et chaveiro, v'chaveiro et chaveiro, afilu hein me'as. This particular halacha is a din that applies only to the chatas. Now, there's other dinim, which normally would define the context of a tuma of a kli. So you remember we had in Kalim, what type of things are considered to be one unit when it comes to Kabbalah's tuma, even though they're made up of separate pieces. The question is, in terms of the hazaya, if something is mekabel tuma, as if it's all the same thing, so let's say you have a bell, so the bell has a clapper. If you touch the clapper, is the entire bell tameh? Or if you touch the outside of the bell, is the clapper tameh? If we view it as one kli, despite the fact that it's not really connected to each other in a way that makes it a single solid piece, would that also extend to the tahira? So that's the question that we want to entertain now. And from this point on, it should be, we'll see that there's actually a little bit of a machlokas for showing you whether all of the cases from this point on are based on this yisod. But the pashtus is that from this point on, what we're going to be looking at is the question of whether a kli that's made out of two separate pieces is considered to be a single kli, legabe hazaya, or only legabe tuma. So let's say I have you a zug and an inbal. So the outside of the bell part, and you've got the clapper part. Now, we know that it's a chibur, as far as tuma is concerned. The chiddush over here is that it's considered to be a chibur even in terms of tahira, meaning even in terms of hazoya. So if they're attached, obviously if you disconnected them, it's not, this is not some kind of spooky action from a distance, you understand. So if you were metame the zug, you're not going to be metame an infil that's not attached. But if it is attached, it works both for the tuma and for the tyra. Wow. Now, a kush shel rovan. So remember, the kush, the way that they used to spin, was that people would just hold a spinning, that instead of a wheel, which is heavy and actually is a lot easier to use, but if you're walking along, you're sitting down and you're just reading the newspaper in the morning with your coffee, the woman would, of course, be spinning her webs while she's drinking her coffee. So there you had a spindle. So the spindle is essentially the same idea as any weight that you're using in order to maintain the inertia of the weight. So you don't have to do the work. You give it a spin, and then the mass of what you have continues spinning. And we do this all the time. We've got flywheels in cars. We've got gyroscopes and so on and so forth. It's basically your own little gyroscope, and you spin it. And what you do is you have like a little hook on top, and then you feed these fibers as it's spinning, and that forces the fibers as you're pulling them through, twisting them together, and what comes out on the other side is thread. Now, here we're talking about reeds, so it's rovan, and these are like very thick ropes or for mats, and over there, you've got this heavy weight at the bottom, and then you've got the actual different parts, which we're calling. And here's where we got a little bit, as I mentioned, there's a little bit of a machlokas we've shown you, where we might have gone off topic. And that's why I much prefer the approach that keeps it on topic, which is the question of whether it's all considered to be one thing or not. So the kush of the roban, that would be the pelech that you use for roban, which is thick hemp materials. It's a type of gemi. I don't know, you know, particularly what type of reed it is, but it's what's used normally for basket weaving or for mat weaving and so on. So over there, you should be careful to actually do the hazoya on the kush itself and not to do it on the area which is attached. So do it not directly on the kush, and that is what we call the pelech itself, and not on the pika, which is the heavy weight. It's called the kadur often in the Gemara. So that's at the end, at the bottom. But you should do it on the body of the spindle. And that is that little piece that you put the thread through, or in this case, you put the reeds through that is shaped like a hook of some kind. And that is the main cleat. So you should make sure that you get it on the actual main cleat. But if you did do it on the kush or on the pika and not directly on the ikur of the pelech, you did it instead on the side elements, it would still be kosher b'diavad because it's considered to be a chibur, but it doesn't look so good. So Rabbanu were geizer to do the hazoya separately. Okay, this is one of the approaches. And so again, there's a whole different approach, which is that the issue of here is not whether you do it on one and not on the other, but whether you need to do it on each part. And the b'diavad is if you only did it on one part. Fine. That also is consistent with the halachas that we've had so far. Okay, so we've got the heavy weight at the bottom. We've got the actual shaft in the middle. And then we have the hook, which is what we're calling here we're calling it the actual spindle. It's essentially the main part is the part that does the work. So this is a kushal ruvin. Or shel arisa. Now they also used to have a portable crib, which is very common today as well, except that today they don't.
Kista.
What's that?
Sokista.
Oh, sorry.
Let me skip one. Sokista.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Forgive me. Shel pishtan, if you have, however, not this thick material which is used for mats, but you're talking about a thick but wearable material like linen. So it's a much more compact unit, and there's a much stronger connection between the heavy ball at the end and the hook at the top, because it doesn't have to like extend all over the place and be screwed one into the other. It's just one cleat. So if it's shel pishtan, if you require hazaya, there it doesn't matter. There it's considered to be a complete chibur, not only b'diavad. Sorry, thank you, Shmuel. So moving on to a portacrib. So remember that the way that a portacrib works, nowadays, of course, we use plastic. We didn't have plastic, so you used leather. So a portacrib works by having this frame that you pull out the frame, and then you put the plastic covering over it, which maintains the frame open, and that now gives you an actual cradle. Now, it's not a permanent kind of cradle because the whole point of it is that you want it to be a portacrib. So you will always take off the or from or the plastic, which now that's not partially would be makabel tuma b'chol, but you would take off the or in order to be able to fit it into your car trunk, right? So in this case, it's considered to be a chibur as long as it's actually working as a portacrib. And that would mean it's a chibur across the board. If, let's say, the or was makabel tuma, so then that means that the frame was makabel tuma, and vice versa. If the frame was makabel tuma, then the or is also tame, and therefore you can be maze on one, and the hazoya counts for the other one as well. Hamal bein. Eino chibur lo letuma velo letara. There's two approaches to malbein. We've spoken about the malbein in Kalim as well. Big machlok is what actually is meant bichlal by a malbein. So some learn that the malbein is a protective piece that is put under the bed legs, and that prevents the moisture in the floor from rotting the wood of your bed. So it's like nowadays people will use something like that for putting furniture on carpet to spread the weight, but it's not permanently attached. So the malbein in that sense is not considered to be a chibur because it really is not mechubar at all. And therefore, it's not a chibur in any direction. It's not a chibur for tuma, and it's certainly not a chibur for tahira. So therefore, It's not like the others. This is one approach to the Malbane. The other approach that we had to the Malbane was that the Malbane is a board that you throw onto the bed frame to be able to support the mattress, but it's not actually connected to the bed in any way. And then you could take it down. So that's similar to the case of the Porter Grip that we had before. Okay, so this is a little bit of a problem. It seems to be the way the Rambam understands Malbane, but then the question is, well, so why is the Malbane thrown on a frame less than the Or that would be thrown on the frame for a Porter Grip? Therefore, most of Rishonim learn the first pshat that I told you, that the Malbane is not connected at all, and you just put the legs into this Malbane so that they're not damaged by the floor. Now, how about Yadot? There's two basic ways of making Yadot. You can have male Yadot, or you can have female Yadot. Most Kelim, the Yad is female. So what you do is you stick, you have a knife, and then you have a fork. The fork continues on in not such a pretty piece of metal, which is inserted into a pretty handle, which then covers it. Or the knife is inserted into a protective piece of plastic. You hold the handle of the knife so that it's the handle that is female in that sense, and that is called kiduchot. So kiduchot means that they are hollowed out in order to accept the kli that's put into them. So that is considered to be actually a real chibur, and they're stuck together tight, and that would be a chibur both for Tuma and for Hazayah. But a Tana Kama holds, if they're not kiduchot, and they're actually charukot, so there are some kind of things where you want to sort of make an impression. Let's say you have a dagger. So a dagger is not put into a piece that makes it look like a kitchen knife. It's supposed to look like a dagger, you know? So over there, what you have is the dagger continues on. It has a hole in it, and there's something that you stick into the hole that allows you to use it as a dagger, much more frightening than a kitchen knife. All right. So that is called a charukot instead of being kiduchot. So charukot means that they're sharpened at the end to be able to stick into a hole in the dagger or that type of thing. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says even the charukot are also considered to be a chibur, and even though it's not as tight, afalpikan, they're considered to be a chibur, and we paskin not like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, and it's only the kiduchot that are considered to be tightly enough attached to be a chibur bein letuma and bein lahazoyah.